Welcome to the Community Conversations podcast, where we believe that world transformation begins with gospel transformation, and gospel transformation begins with discovering the truth about who God is and who you are. And it starts right now.
Hello again. Welcome to another episode of the Community Conversations podcast. I'm excited to be back with Noah Chant today. Noah, how are you doing?
Good. Good to be back.
It's great to have you.
It's weird not being here.
Yeah. Feels like it's been longer than 2 weeks.
It does. I feel empty inside, so it's good to...
Well, let's get filled up.
It's good to be... Awesome. Glory to God. Let's do this.
So a couple of weeks ago, we kind of teased an episode on prayer.
Yeah.
We mentioned that, and I've been thinking about that a lot, and I think I'd like to spend this episode just talking about prayer.
Sure. Yeah.
In reality, one episode probably doesn't do the topic of prayer justice.
No, it doesn't.
There's just a lot. There's a lot you can talk about.
Yeah. Oh, my. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's the foundation of the Christian life.
Yeah.
But I think in this kind of, you know, as we're going through this hearing the voice of God thing, I mean, I think you have to, you can at least lay a foundation on it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So while this is a big topic, I think we can do this without feeling like we have to cover too much ground today.
Yeah.
But I think there are some misconceptions around prayer. And I think the first one, and this was always like really confusing to me. And I remember being younger. And thinking about the verse that says that where it talks about like praying unceasingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember reading that and being like, well, I got to eat at some point.
I'm probably
going to sleep. Yeah. I'm probably going to watch movies.
Yeah.
And so I remember hearing that and thinking like, so which is it? Like, am I going to get to eat and like hang out and do other stuff? Or am I just going to sit in a room and pray all day?
It's like when you hear about like, you know, when they used to talk about like life in heaven, and I put that in air quotes. But life in heaven, like you're just gonna be worshiping God forever, and you're a kid, and you're like, that kind of sounds like it's gonna suck.
Remember, like an hour a week is enough for me,
like all day, every day. Like, so now we, you know, we can do whatever we want, and now we're just gonna sit there and just all be in a room together listening to, you know, Hillsong United songs forever. Right. Like, no, thank you.
You are describing my childhood, literally. I mean, I remember thinking, like, heaven doesn't sound very fun.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like streets of gold. You won't really get to walk them. We're going to be in service pretty much the whole time.
You might get a glimpse on your way in. But.
Yeah, but that's it, man. Why have a mansion when you can be in service all day? You know, it's like to me, the way they used to describe heaven is like the guy who's super wealthy, but it's because he works so hard that he has no time to spend his own money. Right. You know, that's what heaven sounded like.
Yep.
Yeah, you're as rich as can be, but your hours are crazy up there.
So let's talk about that then. Let's talk about what in reality and what biblically does it look like to live a life of prayer unceasingly, because it's not just you sitting in a room by yourself interceding 24 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not that.
Right.
But if it's not that, then what is it?
What is it? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one aspect of it is tied to the reality of every moment holy. And prayer has kind of been downgraded to just conversation with him, which is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the overall word prayer is a larger term of in presence, in a sense.
Sure.
I don't know if that's the best definition, but... And so I think there's this place where if his desire is to walk with you in everything, that means that every moment gets to be holy and every moment is filled with his presence.
Yeah.
And I think there is a piece of that is conversational, because we have conversations, me and him in the car, mm-hmm. or, you know, working in the backyard or whatever it is. We have all those things. But I think there's this place of being so connected with him that it's a presence-based thing because, you know, and I can't remember if we mentioned this on the podcast or not, but, you know, prayer is so important because literally it's the kind of the chief job of Jesus now.
Yeah.
Is to intercede on our, it's what it says now. He's at the right hand of the Father interceding on our behalf. It's kind of the only job it shows that he has right now is interceding. Uh-huh. And so I think, you know, even like to pray without ceasing is that ability to be in such relationship with him. I think too, there's this like connectivity to him as he's interceding.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this idea of pray without ceasing is as much tied into a lifestyle of prayer.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of like idioms used, you know, in scripture. We're really bad in the West about interpreting different types of scripture.
Sure.
You know, I preached on this Sunday, whether it be like scripture that's poetic imagery, whether it be scripture, you know what I mean, that is, you know, like apocalyptic, or whether it be biographical.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be wisdom literature, you know, it's, you know, one of the things we've talked about is a lot of people, you know, use Proverbs as promises, and Proverbs aren't promises. They're just wisdom literature.
Really good advice.
Really good advice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like raise your son up, raise a child up in the way he should go and he won't depart from you. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't always work out for people. Go ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it is good advice.
Yeah.
Raise a child up in the way they should go.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a good chance those things that you've put in them as a child will always be with them to a point.
Right.
You know, and so I think there's a lot of things like that. And I think pray without ceasing is this combination of presence and connectivity and also a lifestyle of prayer in the sense of like, yeah, like pray, like when you're like, have a lifestyle of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like pray without ceasing. It's like faith of a mustard seed, move a mountain.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, like it is real terms, but it's also describing a small thing and a big thing.
Sure. Yeah.
It's not like the, you know, the formula is mustard seeds and mountains. The formula is this amount of faith and how big of an issue this could be.
Right.
And how much you can do to it.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something I've come into the realization of, and honestly, at a relief to know that prayer, it means different things, and it takes different forms.
Very
in our lives.
Very,
and I think that has been a relief for me, just knowing that they're really, because I remember thinking about that and thinking, well, there's just no way,
right?
You know,
right.
It feels like we're being asked to do something that like we're being set up to fail for. You know?
Oh, for sure.
When
in a life I can't maintain.
Yeah, right.
I have to work and take care of my kids and
But when you start to grasp that prayer is, now it is at times sitting alone and interceding.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that plays a big role.
That plays a big role. But you're right. It also is thinking about him and, having conversations when you're in the car, when you're mowing the grass.
Yeah. Worship even.
Worship. It's, you know, I think times throughout my day where I just practice being aware of him with me.
Is prayer,
you know,
100%.
We may not be talking, but I am actively thinking about his presence in and around me.
Yeah. Well, I think you can attest to this, you know, and it's probably more of a guy thing than anything else, but men oftentimes are more comfortable just being in the room with their wives.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think, you know, Bailey's connectivity with us is conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my connectivity with us is presence.
Sure.
Like we don't have to be, you know, communicating or talking or even doing the exact same thing. If we're in the room together, in my opinion, we've spent the day together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's not how she sees it all the time. But
Katie has the story, and I don't remember it, so I'll just have to take her word for it. But apparently on our way to our honeymoon, there was a moment where she claims that I...
She claims that I
commented or made something, said something in the way of suggesting, hey, we don't really have to talk the whole time. We can.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
But
well, it happened to
us. It could have happened.
Yeah, it happened to us the other day. We were in the car and we were driving somewhere And Bailey had to send out some like work text messages.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, like if we're in the car, she likes to be, she likes to have conversation. Sure. And so she goes through about like 5 or 10 minutes of just like quietly sending these. She gets on, she goes, sorry for being quiet. I was on my phone. I was like, I was actually okay. I was totally fine.
Yeah.
Silence doesn't bother me.
Yep.
You know, but I think you're right. Like there's this place of, you know, where I think Christ is a lot like that, where just an awareness of presence is prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And just being in the same room, it doesn't have to be communication.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a peace in that.
Because
mm-hmm. I can be sitting on the, like, I could be sitting on the couch not talking, but worrying about my bills. Mm-hmm. I could be sitting on in my car not talking, worrying about my marriage
mm-hmm.
or worrying about my kids or my future. Or I could be on those places mentally trying to feel and learn where he is in the room, in the car,
mm-hmm.
and with no talkings involved.
Yep.
So you can put your mind to what you want to put your mind to. And that, you know, in a sense is the unceasingness, I think, of
yeah
of that.
And what I'm finding, and, you know, I'd be curious to know if this is your experience too, but I'm finding that even the simplicity of thinking about him and just practicing being aware of his presence with me and in me, that I'm finding that in my times of just contemplating, not even necessarily contemplating like biblical things or contemplating sure. him, but just contemplating whatever the things that, you know, are on your mind,
mm-hmm.
I'm finding that the more aware I become of him with me, the more I feel like I'm accessing his thoughts without really like asking for it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. And I think it is the immediate, on the flip end of that, I think it is immediate sign of my lack of awareness of presence when I begin to question everything in my life, my calling, my decisions, my finances, my this or that.
Interesting.
Like, I think on the other end, I think, you know, when you're in that, become so aligned with his thoughts that you really start dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. a lot of your actual creativity and calling yeah. comes out of those moments.
Sure.
And I think, you know, the best red flag you can find for lack of presence is doubt and fear.
Yeah.
Immediately. I know immediately, like, you know, there are just days, especially right now, because normally the mornings are my serious prayer time, but just like during hunting season, you know, I'll go hunt all morning and then my day gets started. And sometimes I just can't get everything in.
Mm-hmm.
And you let a day or two like that go by. It's not detrimental to my life. I'm not thinking about quitting my whole life running away to Alaska or nothing. You know, but there are little micro expressions and thoughts that begin to fill in your head and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Right. This mm-hmm. is why.
Yeah. Well, and I think when you said that about, you know, you start having those questions. I think the way I've experienced that is, I think the less aware of him and his presence and his influence in me, the less aware of that I am, I think the more my questions take the form of doubt.
Yeah,
whereas the more aware I am of him and what he's thinking, the more my questions are not formed around doubt, but they're formed around wonder.
Yeah.
And you begin to wonder and dream, just like you said.
Yeah, well, you realize... I have become more aware the past year than ever in my life that the Christian journey is not about preservation. I'm not trying to like preserve myself for another stage of life. You know, I'm actually called to dream. I'm actually called to create. I'm actually called to take chances.
Yeah.
I'm actually, you know, called into the mystery of maybe even something will fail.
Yeah.
But, you know, with him, maybe that leads to a success.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's you know, it's the long journey. It's the long path journey.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think even in that, you're right. I think fear and doubt causes preservation.
Yeah,
like,
that's
I'm
really
not going,
good.
You know, I'm not going to take the opportunity or the chance of starting this business because I have enough money now to survive.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
That's preservation.
Sure.
You know, I have enough money to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but that's surviving.
Yep.
You know, and Yahweh's not called us. I mean, Abraham was comfortable.
Yeah, he was doing just fine.
He was doing just fine. And, you know, even when he moves out, like there's a moment of fear, but Yahweh always brings greater to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he does that through dreaming with Abraham.
Yeah.
I'll give you a kid. I'll give you land. Like,
yeah.
And if you're Abraham, that's all you're thinking about from here on out.
Yep.
the land promised, the sun promised, all the stuff. You spend your whole life dreaming.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it changes everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think like that is what prayer does, is it moves you out of a life of perseverance and really moves you into that kind of lifestyle of,
yeah,
man, like we're always dreaming and creating together.
Yeah. And the more time you spend with him, thinking about him, talking to him, being aware of him, the more you find yourself invited, the more you find yourself invited into just kingdom reality.
Yeah.
To where, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned this just a second ago, that you, it's, you know, the journey of your creating and your, what, you know, whatever. I do think that as Christians, I think we're meant to be the most creative, the most innovative, yeah, the most inventive, you know, the most, I think we're supposed to be the ones who have the solutions to every problem that there is in the world.
Yeah.
I think that we are meant to be leading that every one of those categories. And I think that all of those things are birthed through prayer.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, even if you were to take a look at, here's how crazy it gets. I actually talked about this to a couple of my spiritual sons the other day. It gets so crazy that before Jesus picks the disciples, he goes up and prays.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't know.
Yep.
It's almost like he's like, well, I think I know, but let me just go check.
Yeah.
And through prayer, he comes down. He goes, I pick you, I pick you. You know what I mean? I pick you, I pick you.
Yeah.
And like everything it seems, and that's why like I think prayer is so interesting, because I don't feel like I need to have a prayer life to be saved. I feel like I need to have a prayer life because I desire to be whole.
Sure.
You know, and that's where like prayer has left legalism and religion for me.
Yeah.
I don't pray because he'll get mad if I don't.
Right.
And I don't pray because it's what's leading to my salvation. I actually pray because with him is wholeness and eternal life.
Yeah.
And fullness, and the fullness of my dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, it's such a different thing than this idea of, you know, praying out of
really good,
out of, oh man, I have to do this.
Yep.
It's like, no, but like when you hear the message, you're as righteous as God and you're as holy as God, and you go, well, I don't feel that way. Well, it's not because you're not.
Right.
It's probably because you haven't heard him tell you.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. And I think on the line of thought, what you were saying about like preservation, I wonder if one of the things we often try to preserve in ourselves is, in a sense, like our, you know, our image, if you will, or our reputation. Like, I wonder how often the Lord invites us into things that are creative, they're innovative, there's some kind of an invention.
Yeah.
Something that has potential for failure.
Yeah.
If we move forward with it. And I wonder how often we don't take him up on his offers because we want to preserve, we want to save face, we want to preserve our image, our reputation.
I don't want to take a chance.
Fear of failure. You know?
I think that's really real. I think most stuff is based out of fear of, well, I think it's two things. I think it's fear of failure and the perversion of that that's come out of social media.
Yeah.
I think there's kind of been a perversion of marketing, even yourself, because there are a lot of people that have incredible stories and talents and skills, and they need to be like in the digital space. You know, we have a lot of sons and daughters in the house that are that way.
Yeah.
You know, that I've been calling that out more recently out of sons and daughters than ever, that you've got stuff that needs to be in the digital space, but because it's been so perverted in that area, I think we have this fear of like, I don't want to be the one, you know, with my butt on my head.
Yeah.
You know, and like caught in that. So I'll live in the fear of just managing and just, you know what I mean? And just being enough for me.
Mm-hmm. And I think what happens when we stay more accustomed to thinking according to like worldly thought and worldly logic and worldly reason, because that's so diametrically opposed to the kingdom.
Totally.
I think that the more we stay in line with worldly thinking and earthly thinking, I'll call it that, I think it's a lot easier for us to have those thoughts of fear and convince ourselves that that's actually wisdom.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, all the time.
That's what fear masquerades as wisdom. Like one of its jobs.
Yeah, big time. And I think, too, I think is the least I put myself out there, the more I get to control the narrative of how people perceive me.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, the less I do, the less I put myself, you find that with the prophetic,
mm-hmm.
the less I put out there, the less I prophesy over people,
yeah.
the more people don't have the ability to perceive me as yeah. a false prophet.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm just not going to do
I'll
it.
I'll never be wrong if I don't.
I'll never be wrong if I don't try.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I'll never fail if I don't start a business.
Exactly.
I'll never, you know.
Yeah. And I think yeah. you have to get over the fear of how people will perceive you, because you're going to gain enemies and you're going to gain people that don't understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like I'm a great testament of people hating what I'm doing. You know what I mean? I've probably had sometimes it feels like more negative things sometimes said about me than positive, which isn't true, but
yeah.
it feels that way. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to realize that you will never control people's perception, but
yeah.
you can always connect with the voice of the Father and just go with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How many illogical steps do men of the Bible take?
Yeah.
That feel psycho. Like, what are you doing?
Everything the Lord asks of people in the Bible is the opposite of what logically we think they should
yeah,
do.
Yeah, what I would do in yeah. any situation.
Yeah. He's like, hey, Israel's having a tough time. Hey, Gideon, hey, come out here for a second.
Yeah.
And Gideon's like, I'm not the dude.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's exactly
why I want you.
I want you.
You know, yeah.
yeah.
It's like, it's so, I think like there's this fear of like, man, if I ever do anything, if I create or dream with Yahweh and people perceive me wrong, that's going to crush me.
Mm.
But I think, unfortunately, what that leads to is a lack of prayer life. And in your prayer life, you find yourself.
Yeah.
And so people's perception of you can't change you.
Right.
Like, you know, like there's been a lot of stuff I feel like that we've preached out of here or has been said or I've said, you know, people have can take the wrong way.
Sure.
And people have.
Yeah.
But because I know who I am and I know who he's made me and I know the message he's put in my heart,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't bother me. Doesn't yeah. mean you can't take it, you know, advice or like yeah. I have a spiritual father that will tell yeah. me, hey, that was dumb. You're wrong.
Yeah. Sure.
go tell your people, you know, yeah. apologize.
Yeah.
You know, and I've even, you know, like I've heard Apostle apologize for things he said yeah. from the pulpit.
Yeah.
So that's not it. It's not about, you know, we've talked about having authority over you, but there is this reality of you to live in wonder and creativity, you have to risk being perceived wrong.
Sure. Misunderstood.
Just,
yeah.
It's just a part of the process of, mm-hmm. of what you're doing.
Yep.
You know, and I think prayer is scary for people because it starts to put things in their hearts and mind that they're scared about.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, he loves to ask us to, you know, take risks and do, you know.
Yeah.
And this is something that I felt like the Lord has kind of challenged me on, but maybe corrected me in that. I don't know if you've ever heard it said this way, that people love to say that faith is spelled R-I-S-K.
Yeah.
You know, and I've heard that said, and I...
What a bumper sticker.
Well, I was thinking about that with the Lord one day, and I was like, I actually don't think that's right. I think it begins there.
Yeah.
I think faith begins by spelled R-I-S-K, but eventually it becomes T-R-U-S-T. Eventually faith doesn't look like risk, it just looks like trust.
Trust. You're 100% right, because you don't care about the outcome.
Well, yeah, you don't care about the outcome, and you trust that if my heart is positioned in such a way that I want to hear and obey, then, like, to me, that is success.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I don't, you know, the Lord is inviting Katie and I into some ventures, and he's kind of given us a couple, like, milestone markers, and I felt like even showing us maybe a couple years down the road what we might be invited into, and it would be really easy for me to say, I'm good. You know,
I'm fine. Yeah,
but
yeah, I get to hang out with Noah, and that's enough for
right?
me. Right?
You know? I can just sit here with Noah. We'll do our podcast.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the more I let him speak into, you know, the direction of my life and the things that he's invited me into, the less I care about whether or not I'm going to quote unquote fail, because I think right. that if our goal in life is to hear and obey. Like, I think that's success.
I completely agree.
And if maybe he invites me to do something, to write something, to create something, and it doesn't pan out as well as maybe I thought it could or I thought yeah. it would, I think the bottom line question is, well, was my heart, position to be obedient to the Lord.
Right. You're right. And I think that that takes all the fear and stress and doubt of worldly success away.
Yeah.
If in 10 years, BeLove is a non-existent entity, I know that a shadow of doubt, I've listened to the voice of Yahweh, and what I'm doing right now is where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the earthly result doesn't matter because I've done the job, which is obedience. You're right.
Yeah.
I've done the job, which is obedience, and I trust the outcome, whatever it may look like.
Yeah.
And not only that, I've been reveling in this idea of creativity recently, and I keep going back to it in my message, in everything in my life right now. But I even think with that trust too comes new ways to dream and create with him.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, you know, like if you were to take you and Katie, for example, you guys have felt called to families,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, parents, to kids, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, 20, maybe 30 years ago, the only expression that maybe would have been known by that is pastoring.
Yeah.
And so you would have translated that into, oh, me and Katie must...
We'll be the family pastor at some church.
Yeah, that, or like, we're going to start our own church. This must mean that we're called to pastor our own church because we feel called to families.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And so you could have just gone with that, but instead you leaned into prayer and trust and said, this actually isn't, you know, it's making history. It's our own thing that looks different. And there's honestly no real blueprint for it.
Right.
Some of the stuff you're dreaming of hasn't been done yet.
Yeah.
But that's only found through trust and creativity too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And aligning maybe a desire with him forming it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so much of prayer even is, hey, here's a desire or a lump of clay, form it.
Yeah.
Because I think as long as what the church has been terrible about is I want to do something, so let me find out how someone else has done it, and I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing anyone's ever done.
Yeah.
Anyone that feels called to preach, pastors.
Yeah.
Anyone that, you know what I mean, feels called to do this, you know, write or writes a book. You know, like, mm-hmm. We've lost creativity, and the world went after creativity.
Yeah.
And finding new things. And I think Yahweh is calling the church back into, hey, I've got some really cool ways to do things.
Yeah.
And your title doesn't have to be senior pastor to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and even ministries here, like, I've been feeling such a call that there are going to be, like, I don't want to start like a family ministry out of BeLove.
Mm-hmm.
I want, you know, this to be a house that harbors sons and daughters like you and Katie, and you guys have your own ministry.
Because everybody in the body has things they're really passionate about.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to have your, you know, our name on it.
Yeah.
And you can go create and this and have a home and a spiritual father and spiritual mother, mm-hmm. and go do your thing.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, and I think there's so much a place in prayer where, one, leaders lose the narcissistic nature to have control of everything,
mm-hmm.
and two, people feel the freedom to dream and not have to go, well, this is a ministry.
Mm-hmm.
It can be whatever you feel like it needs to be. Cultivate it with the Holy Spirit.
Yep.
You know, and that's just different than, and I think that's why prayer is looked down on, because no one sees prayer like that.
Right.
No one sees prayer as this, you know, playground of creativity and fun with him.
Uh-huh.
Because prayer, you know, to us growing up was, well, get ready. He's going to tell you how you need to change. And I hope you don't like that TV show you're watching because he's going to tell you to quit watching it, you know?
Yeah.
I hope you don't, like Creed because he's going to have you stop listening to them. You know? And so, like, prayer's always been this thing where you go and he tells you what not to do and what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think prayer is more this place to dream. And I feel like Jesus operates in a sense of complete control by the Father, but within that, he understands the confines of autonomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, and I've heard people use this illustration too. And what you said reminds me of this, that in the sense of being creative, you know, let's say I need a chair, okay? I need a chair, a nice wooden chair, a wooden rocker, okay?
Real
something
nice.
You'd get from Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, yeah, one of them $500 Cracker Barrel rockers. Right.
And say, you know, I'm just praying to the Lord, I need a chair. His response might be, he very well might say, well, I don't make chairs, I make trees.
Yeah.
Why don't you go make a chair?
Yeah.
And just to mean that, what I mean by that is, like, I think a lot of times he gives us the resources around.
Yeah.
But he does give us that autonomy to say, hey, I've put this in and around you.
Yes.
Go build something with it.
Yes.
Because we are creative.
We're
not meant to, be, I think, I think we've taken a very passive role as the church in being innovative leaders in the world.
Very much so. Very much so.
And I do think that we are meant to be the most creative people on the planet.
I agree.
Because we have access to the one who creates.
Yeah. And how many people have described heavenly encounters with colors they've never seen?
Yeah.
Or sounds they've never heard.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, whatever that is, it's like there's obviously some creativity we're missing out on. And instead of recycling ideas, let's go create. Let's make prayer our place of joy and wonder and creation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go find out which trees are best. I'm tired of buying rocking chairs.
Yeah.
I want my own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And creating a house where people can be that. Like, mm-hmm. My last job before ministry, I needed a desk that fit between two closet doors perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And there was none. And there's a couple that was close, but they were disgustingly ugly.
Sure.
And there's nothing I could do about that. But, there's a son of the house in Braden.
Yeah.
Who literally made the exact thing I wanted custom because that's just what he does for fun.
Yeah.
And so, I can go out into the world and do something, or I can find creativity in the house
mm-hmm.
between sons and daughters and go, hey, like, can you build this?
Yeah.
Let's make together. Let's build together. And I think if people could find that place of prayer, you almost want to pray without ceasing.
Yeah.
Because in that you're finding, like, we've talked a lot about this. I've been just feeling some things personally in my own life to get into. And one of the things I told you is, like, I don't have a blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lighthouse to say start here. I really don't. I have nothing.
You have an impression in your spirit that you're meant to create.
Yeah. That's literally all I've had.
Yeah.
And, and I've had countless conversations with my spiritual father and with, my friends. And now, like, I'm interceding with the Holy Spirit and I'm finding, like,
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
This is a way, and in that it's like, there's this freedom of, I didn't even have to discover it. He did.
Yeah.
I'm just listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like listening to a music artist write all their songs and you getting them out before they can release them. It's like, well, now they're mine.
Yeah.
It's what it's like.
Yeah.
And that is the place where prayer becomes almost like addictive.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Like, you can see where Jesus was doing his thing because everything was working out so well. Why would he stop?
Right. Whoa, every single person I pray for gets healed?
Yeah.
This is working.
Yeah, what am I going to do? Stop? What I mean? Like, it's the nature of it, and that's what prayer is called to be.
Yeah.
And there is places, everyone gets caught up in the absolutes. There obviously is places in prayer of a correction and discipline and conversation about other things and even hard decisions you have to make.
Yeah.
But the lifestyle of prayer revolves, in my opinion, more around creativity.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a question on that. Before I ask you real quick, let's just take a quick brief pause and hear a word from our sponsor.
Ooh.
Looking for the perfect Airbnb getaway? Look no further than Maggie's Place, your ticket to an unforgettable stay in Sevierville, Tennessee. Nestled in the heart of the stunning Smoky Mountains, Maggie's Place is not just an Airbnb, it's an experience you won't want to miss. This charming 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath townhome offers all the comforts of home with a touch of Tennessee charm. Imagine waking up to the serene beauty of the mountains, sipping your morning coffee on the porch and planning your day of adventures in the Smokies. And the best part is, Maggie's Place is just minutes away from all the attractions, dining, and entertainment that Sevierville has to offer, not to mention close to Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg. Ready to make your Smoky Mountain dreams come true? Visit Maggie's Place on Airbnb today to book your stay and start creating unforgettable memories. For more information, go to the Airbnb link, www.airbnb.com/H/Maggie's-place-TN or contact Kim Balistrary at 770-548-0902.
All right. So here's a question for you.
Okay.
I think this might be a question that just people would have around prayer, but can we talk about just for a minute a few of the different types of prayer? even that we see in the Bible.
Yeah.
Because there are, I think there are a few specific forms that prayer yep. takes. And we've been talking a lot about the very, I don't know what you'd call it, very...
general.
Yeah, maybe. Just kind of general lifestyle, presence awareness.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. But the church definitely had defined
yeah.
types that they mm-hmm. used.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the first is intercessory prayer, mm-hmm. you know, intercession. You know, a lot of, I'd say almost all the great ministries and leaders you see around the world now and even like previously, you know, were surrounded by teams of intercessors that prayed over them, you yeah. know. Mm-hmm. There are just people called to that life, you yeah. know. And there has been a great revolution. If you ever, there's a great book by Benny Johnson, Bill's wife, called The Happy Intercessor.
Okay.
Kind of recovering the joy. Because, you know, when yeah. I was a kid, like intercessory prayer women were like the ones whose husbands died in their 20s and they've been single for 60 years now. And all they do is pray and cry. And
yeah. And it's, you know, they paint a picture of it being like, it's hard work.
Yeah.
And
it's painful, like, angry, you know, yeah. spiritual warfare over all the stuff Jesus defeated.
Yeah.
and so, but yeah, you know, I think there, one is definitely intercession, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes interceding for something.
Yeah.
You know, whether that could be a breakthrough or maybe a personal miracle, something yeah. like that, you know, there's times mm-hmm. of it. We've seen great, I hate to use the word term, it's the only one I know to use, is like, we've seen great success.
Yeah.
With intercessory prayer, you mm-hmm. know, whether it be for businesses or people or healings or miracles or
yeah.
freedom of some kind, mm-hmm. you know, so that's a big one. And there's definitely people I think called to that, I don't know if the right term is office, but office to hold.
Yep. And that's actually another question I was going to ask you and you already answered it, but mm-hmm. in that, you know, if we were to look at the gifts of the Spirit, I believe that everybody in the body has access to all the gifts of the Spirit.
For sure.
But I think that there are certain people that have certain like inklings or aptitudes or proclivities yeah. towards
mm-hmm.
certain gifts.
Yeah.
Well, like everybody can prophesy, but there are some people who are like really prophetic.
Deadly. yeah. Know? Well, yeah. And Paul says in, I believe it's Romans 14, I could be wrong, but I think it's Romans 14 or 13. He says, you know, assess your worth, you know, like you need to assess your self-worth mm-hmm. honestly. And then he starts going through like some people are gifted for finances.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like you there are some people in our house, man, some dudes
mm-hmm.
And women that are just gifted financially and yeah. everything they touch turns to, you know, 24 karat gold.
Man. Yeah.
It's just the nature
yeah.
of it, you know? And so, yeah, there are definitely people that are called to different things, you know? And I mean, you see like a Lou Engle,
mm-hmm.
the dude can fast.
Yeah.
I'm good for like 4 hours, you know, I'm good. Right. I could fast between lunch and supper. That's about as far as it goes for me. It feels like some days.
yeah.
you know? And so, but you see a guy like that, he's like, yeah, I go to a 21 day fast, come off, eat for 2 days, go back on for 40. It's like,
yeah,
no, not for me. Happy yeah. for you, you know? Yeah. But like, there's just these people that are called to these things. It feels yeah. like in different ways. And so, yeah, there's yeah. definitely
and
gifts.
I do think that intercessory prayer is one of those mm-hmm. things. I think everybody's called to intercede, but I think there are certain people that just have like a deep burning passion
mm-hmm.
to intercede that maybe not everybody has quite that, feels
oh,
quite that
for
same
sure.
level, you know?
Yeah, the people that can sit in a room for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
Day yep. in and day out, day in and day out.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is like, I think people who have that should feel the excitement and joy that like they have that stamina, that ability.
Yeah.
That requires a lot out of somebody, man.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it does.
So that's, yeah. you know, that's one, you know, like contemplative prayer,
mm-hmm.
you know, the ability to, a lot of people in prayer need action or word or motion or movement.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people are great at being still and listening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, contemplative prayer really is about the ability to tune into Him,
mm-hmm.
to sit in the quiet, to sit and think and yeah. literally, like, sometimes contemplative prayer to me is like fishing in the sense where I throw out a question and I just watch that bobber.
Sure.
You yeah. know, and it could be, yeah. it could be an hour, it could be 5 minutes, but it could be an hour for that thing finally pops mm-hmm. up and down.
Yep.
Or a fish is taking something, you know? And
yeah.
And contemplative prayer is that ability to sit and just be with him. Mm-hmm. No music.
Yep.
No nothing needed, but to be in the stillness mm-hmm. with him. And
yeah.
And especially in our world today, in our world of chaos, contemplative prayer is a lost art, man.
Oh, for sure. You know, it reminds me of something Chris Vallotton said in his book, Spiritual Intelligence. I remember, and he said this, and it was, you know, when you read something in a book and it's like, you couldn't have been more specific to something I was thinking, you know?
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Yeah.
But I remember thinking that because, you know, we know the Lord has thoughts. We know that his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. His thoughts are like the grain of sand, yeah, you know, and
right.
we know that we can access them. And I remember thinking that sort of like the peak of my prayer life would be that I can ask him a question and that I would hear his thoughts. But Chris takes it a step further, and he says, I think that you can take it so far, you can get so in tune with the Spirit that you stop asking him what he's thinking and you start automatically thinking what he's thinking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You become the one that you're called to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you become so in tune with the Spirit, right?
Yeah.
That indwelling Holy Spirit And that's kind of something that I've just been contemplating and wondering, because I do love, I'm a very contemplative person, and so it's nothing for me to just sit and think.
For hours.
You know?
Yeah.
I love to just sit and think,
yeah.
And something I've, I guess, I don't know, I'd say maybe working towards is, you know, I guess wondering, okay, what does that look like for me to sit here and to not just wonder what, not to have my thoughts and then say, well, what do you think? But to sit here and contemplate in such a way that my thoughts are just his thoughts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I even think, like, you know, with that, one of the things I love that Willard has said too, and I think a lot of this is found in contemplative prayer, Dallas Willard has said, you know, he said the end goal, or one of the end goals of the believer, I think for the Father, is to have us be so fully full of him that he trusts us to make all of our own decisions.
Mm.
And I think there's a place where you become so in tune with him and your direction, your right is so the same that you're having his thoughts about manners.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this full autonomy of trust with decisions.
Yeah.
You know, you see Jesus when the Gentile woman comes up to him to be healed. And Jesus makes the statement, my assignment is not to you.
Mm-hmm.
So the Father's assignment is don't heal Gentiles. That's against the rules,
yeah.
You know, in a sense. And, you know, and he calls her a dog, you know, and she comes back with this great one-liner. You know, even the dogs get the crumbs,
yeah.
And Jesus is like...
He's like, man, you got me there.
Man, what a good one.
Yeah.
And even though it may have been against the assignment, because a lot of people are like, well, he was just testing her. Well, that's assumption.
Yeah.
You know. But what I do think is I do believe the Father trusted Jesus enough that he had the Father's thoughts in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And even though that may have, in a sense, felt like it was going against the assignment, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was the heart of the Father towards whatever it was in life.
Right.
And I think that was a great moment of like, you know, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm here to do too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's this place in contemplative prayer where you're right, you grow in... First Peter, I believe it's First Peter, would say that we don't know what we will become. All that we know is that we will become just like him.
Yeah.
And it'll be because we fully see him as he is.
Yeah.
And I think contemplative prayer is one of the greatest ways to see him as he is and become just like him.
Mm,
and you can't become just like someone until you think just like him and act just like him.
Yep. Well, you know, I would say that action... Or that thought is what precedes action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I see some really successful businessmen in our church and I think, oh, I'd like to be like them, I'm just going to go start a business.
Yeah.
Well, chances are their businesses are succeeding, not just because of what they're doing, but because of how they think.
Yeah.
And so if you want to be successful in the ways that somebody else is successful, you see somebody who's more successful than you in an area, don't just ask, what are they doing? First, get in their head.
Yeah.
How do they think about what they're doing?
Right.
Because it's their thoughts that are producing action.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's true with our lives, just like you said.
Yeah. When I think it's even tied to the Spirit versus the law, I think the disciples were constantly waiting for the rules
yeah.
of engagement.
Sure.
you know? And Jesus was like, I want you to understand my thoughts, not my actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, you keep seeing me do stuff, and you're like, great, like, you know, how many loaves of bread do we eat to get to do this? Or how many, you know, how many Hail Marys do we throw back, you know, to do this? And it's more this idea of, like, well, just understand how I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he talks about, he oftentimes uses this term to perceive the kingdom.
Yeah.
And perception comes from thought.
Yeah.
Not action.
Mm-hmm.
And the kingdom is perceived. It's not found through action. It's, you know what I mean? It's found through, you know, perception, thought, spirit. And then action takes place.
Yeah.
And you're right. You know, that comes out of contemplative prayer and the nature of being contemplative.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. So we've talked about intercessory prayer.
Yeah. We talked about contemplative prayer.
Another one that I see in the Bible is, you know, sometimes depending on the translation you read, it might say like supplication. I'm thinking of like or Philippians 4, where it says, you know, make your requests known to God.
Yeah,
I think that is a form of prayer. And you've talked, you know, to me about this. I think that's a form of prayer that people may often find themselves hesitant to engage in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it
big time.
Big time. Because, you know, it maybe doesn't feel as holy for me to just sit and tell the Lord about like the list of things that I want.
Yeah, it's true. It's a, you know, and I remember when he had me one time, and I haven't updated in a while. We've moved on, me and him. But at one time, I remember like I never did that, and that felt dirty, you know, because you know, like that was the great youth pastor message.
Yeah.
Was don't pray. Don't tell him what you want.
Yeah.
You know, tell him how you should change.
Right.
You know, tell him all the sins you've been doing. But he made me write a list of like a want list and a dream list of things
I've
desire.
That. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's hard because he's like, no, like there's more. Like, come on. Like, you don't just desire to like heal people.
Yeah.
You tell me about the house you want.
Right.
You know, tell me about the wife you want. Tell me about the car you want.
Yep.
You know, tell me about the business you want. And so that is a very hard thing. But like, I also think like we have an all-inclusive relationship. So like, I bring everything to him, you know, and that includes wants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm not afraid to tell him I want something.
Yeah.
And I know that too, there's a beauty in that because when I get it, he trusts me with it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's one thing to get $1 million when you really shouldn't have it because it'll go fast. But it's another thing when you've become, you know, financially responsible enough to receive $1 million and it not crush you.
Yeah.
That's why the lottery is so dangerous, because most people who get the money have never had money in their lives.
The statistics on that are like unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Almost like everybody who wins the lottery ends up
losing
completely broke.
All of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how you lose like $1.2 billion. I really don't. I can't even understand it myself. But, you know, there is a place, you're right, of like where I go, hey, here's the things I want. And sometimes in the beauty of that, he gives them, and the other times he upgrades them to the purest form of it.
Yep.
Because sometimes people want money, and what they actually want is freedom.
Yeah.
They don't actually want to buy things that are outside of their current state of being.
Yeah.
They just don't want to have to put in 70 hours a week they are doing now and never be with their families to live.
Right.
And so people will say, I'm praying for money so that I can have freedom to be with my family. When you don't need money, you need time.
Yeah.
So maybe you need something that doesn't make you a multi-billionaire. You need something that is that gives you enough autonomy and freedom to fully be present.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and that's, you know, I think with anything in life, like, you know, you think you want this, you think you want that. And even you always doing that with me and refining some things in getting ready to become a father.
Yeah.
On what's valuable.
Sure.
And so, like, I even think that's a great thing about when you come to him with wants or needs or in that form of prayer of asking, is he'll go, great, this is awesome. This will happen. Also, I think you're saying this, but I think if I give you this, you'll go, that's what I want.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted the whole time.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, that's really good. I love that point about, like, I wonder how often people think that what they want, like you said, is just a lot of money.
Yeah.
But really what they're looking for is just like peace of mind.
Right.
You know?
100%.
And that's something the Lord's talked to me a lot about because, and you know, Jesus has that whole thing where he's like, well, you can't serve two masters.
Yeah.
You know, you can't serve mammon and God. You know, sure. you cannot equally love money and God, because you'll come to love one and despise the other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Lord talks to me about money, and one of the conversations that we've had is just around this idea that, okay, well, is money actually going to give me peace of mind, or is changing the way I think about money going to bring me peace of mind?
Right.
Because, you know, in Romans 15:13, Paul says that, you know, God will, what he'll do is he'll fill you with all peace and joy as you trust in him.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times people think, well, I need more money to have peace. Well, actually, I might just need to trust him a little more.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have an image of our life in our head that may not always match,
yeah,
our, like, what would actually be fulfillment to ourselves.
Yeah.
How many, you know, like, I can't tell you, like, it's almost cliche how many wealthy people are depressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's almost cliche how many wealthy people have bad marriages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or what, or control issues, or fear.
Yeah.
Or, you know, anxiety.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, this guy makes like 18 grand a year working at 7-Eleven, doesn't even care in the world. You know, it's like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the perception is, you know, especially with money. Well, I'll say this, with money and with women, the perception is like, you know, if I can have this person and this amount of money, I'm good.
Then I will have achieved happiness.
I will have achieved my goal. And it's like, not true.
Right.
Not true at all. You know, money is the easiest crusher of the soul.
Yeah.
You know, and especially money, I find there is a place where, there's a place where I think people, I don't know, I'm trying to put this the correct way. There's a place where people outpace where I believe Yahweh has them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially financially, and it becomes a crusher to them, because I think when you outpace where Yahweh's taking you, you have to maintain anything you outpace by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And many people have gone, you know, into too much stuff. Like, how many people, when they get a raise or gain more money, buy more things that now hold them more down to the money they have to maintain?
And now they have to keep making that same amount of money.
That same amount of money.
To manage that same lifestyle.
Yeah. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not like you know, one of the things my parents have instilled in me in a good way is not spending money on things, but spending money on experiences.
Sure.
Because, well, one, they won't weigh you down. Mm-hmm. There's no interest rate on them. There's no monthly payment on them.
Yeah.
Or most of them, if you do them right.
if
you have the money to do them. But two, like, you know, like, how many people do that? They go, great, I've got this, and I'm going to buy a second car. I'm going to buy, you know, a second home. I'm going to buy this. I'm going to buy that. And now you've got three payments of over $1,800 a month.
Yeah. And you better hope your business keeps up.
You better hope that, you know, they don't take any of that money away, or we don't hit a recession, you know. And so, like, I think we can even outpace. And I don't think it's like it's a thing with, and I don't think it is in any way him disciplining us by us outpacing. I think I think oftentimes Yahweh, we move into success with Yahweh, and then we try to keep going in it without him.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, how many people have you seen that became wealthy by giving, and then as soon as they became wealthy, stopped giving?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard, I imagine. If you're making 50K a year, you know, that tithe check isn't massive.
No. Yeah, a couple hundred bucks.
You're making 500K.
It's big.
That's a big check to write.
That's a big check to write, man. And more people get successful off giving, and then they move in. And then what happens is I don't even know how we fully got down this road, but I think money and success oftentimes cost you time. And time away from presence. And oftentimes I think that leads into this thing of, now I feel this gap of presence, so now it's my job to maintain.
Yeah.
And maintaining looks like, you know, stinginess. Maintaining looks like fear of losing.
Sure.
Anxiety of not producing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think, you know, like, I think there's such a role to play in maintaining the ability to say, okay, Lord, this is what I want. mm-hmm. in my prayer life.
Yep.
You know, I want this, but I also, I want it as you give it to me.
Yeah.
I feel like I always
yep.
put those things in like, Lord, this is what I want. But like, if this isn't right, like, mm-hmm. don't give me something that's going to crush me, man.
Yeah. Man, that's really good. I never thought about it in those terms that you put it, like outpacing the Lord and mm-hmm. what, you know, where he would have you. One of the things I told the Lord a little while ago is I've told him, and I'll kind of circle this back to prayer.
You're good. We're just going where we're going at this point.
Where we're going. You know, one of the things I told the Lord is, because, you know, Katie and I, we do believe that we're going to manage great wealth.
Sure.
That's been prophesied over us.
Yep.
I feel that in my spirit. I don't really, like if I, you know, 50 years from now, Katie and I yeah. hadn't become really wealthy, I will be shocked.
Yeah. That's why I'm your friend, honestly. I don't enjoy hanging out with you, but I do believe you're going to be wealthy one day.
But one of the things I told the Lord, I said, I do want wealth. I want that. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I want more than wealth is a healthy mindset and relationship with the money I have always. Mm. And if I can't have both, don't give me the wealth. Yep. Just give me a healthy mindset yep. and a healthy way of thinking about the money I have.
Yeah. And I find too, I have found in my own life with the people around me and growing up, people's focus on the money versus the avenue of getting there oftentimes leads to never getting there.
Mm.
And I'll break that down. People are like, man, wouldn't it be amazing to have $10 million?
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll do things like, this is the quickest route to $10 million. It's like, but maybe always calling you to cultivate something so massive that your yearly income is $10 million.
Sure.
And so what happens is people put all their chips into the basket of the money instead of cultivating themselves.
Yeah.
Hmm. And so what's the point of the money if you've not cultivated the person that can have the money?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I would love to, don't get me wrong. I would love, like the Powerball was just $1.2 billion.
Yeah.
I would not be mad if I won that.
Sure.
You know, I'd definitely be yeah. in better shape if I did. But, you know, I was telling the Lord one day, like, Lord, like I just can't imagine all this money and stuff. He said, well, like, I've put enough in you that if you'll cultivate the person you are, the things you're called to do, the person you're called to be, money will never be a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so, like, instead of trying to find ways to gain money, I'm actually focusing on being exactly who the Father says I am.
Yeah.
And in that person has found all the success that I'm supposed to have.
Yeah.
And all the success that I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Which comes back to, you need to pray.
You need to pray. It literally, see how I did that.
There you go.
Merry Christmas. Yeah, no, it comes back to prayer. And that's yeah. the thing is like, I'm learning that the goal is to be who I've been designed to be and all the pieces will fit into that person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so my chief goal is to be a son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's who I'm called to be.
Yeah,
I'm called to be a son. And so what does that look like for me? And everything else will fall into that. If I focus on being a businessman and not a son,
mm-hmm.
I'll be a businessman who's an orphan.
Yeah. You may be a really successful,
very
quote unquote successful businessman.
Yep.
But you may be really empty inside.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's a reason like, you know, like to me, like if I'm Jeff Bezos, like when he got divorced, it's like, what? You got all the money in the world, like, and this can't work for you too? You know what I mean? But like, yeah. you can be anything you want and be an orphan at it.
Yeah,
you can
sure.
be the best singer in the world and be an orphan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything you do, you can be an orphan doing it. And yeah. I think as long as you're an orphan, it will never satisfy.
It won't ever fulfill you.
It won't, man.
Fulfillment is first and foremost found in our sonship.
Yeah.
And our identity.
Yeah, and whatever you do as an orphan, you will cling to not lose because it's the only identity you now have.
Mm-hmm.
If you're super wealthy, you will cling on to your money and yeah. hold on to it as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not the rich guy, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, if you're the incredible singer and you're an orphan, you will cling on to having to be on a stage wherever you are.
Yeah.
Because without that, who are you?
I wonder if that's, you know, sometimes you see athletes and people who, it seems like everybody in the world knows they should probably retire except for them, you know? Mm-hmm. And I do wonder sometimes if you know, it is that orphan thing in people where it's like, I don't know who I am without this.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an incredible story, man, of Adam LaRoche. He's a baseball player. I'm not a huge baseball fan, but he's a part of Buck Commander. That's how I know about him. But I do remember the story when I was younger. It was like 2013. He got offered, I think it was $29 million by the White Sox. He was a baseball player.
Wow.
So it was like a two-year deal, $29 million broken up over 2 years or whatever. And the second year, the second year part of the deal was going to be $14 million. So the mm-hmm. first part was payout and all that stuff. And he has a son, and him and his son at the time was like nine. I mean, best, you know, like a real yeah. father-son relationship.
Yeah.
So everywhere he's ever played, his son has gone to the clubhouse with him.
Wow.
They're there for the day. You know, they're playing baseball, whatever. His son's with him. When he went to the White Sox, you know, during that year, they told him, like, you know, we're not allowing any children into the clubhouse, so your son can't come see you in the clubhouse.
Wow.
And the next week he retired. Wow. And left $14 million on the table.
Yeah.
Because wow. at the end of the day, his identity as a father
yeah.
was at such a higher value than a professional base. I mean, think about how long and how hard. Like, go look at the thousands of people in the minor leagues clawing mm-hmm. for even a half chance at that.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? He's a yep. starting, you know,
wow.
you know, hit. I mean, an amazing batter, incredible batter. And so like to drop everything, including the money, and say, you know what, I've actually got enough money. I'll just yeah. retire. And now I watch him all the time hunting with his son.
Wow.
And his son's about to get married, and they're hunting together. They're doing life together. They're, you know, and soon he'll have a grandson, and they'll three wow. will do things together.
Yep.
And it's because his identity is a father.
Yeah.
You know, and this yep. is such a good pastor analogy. I didn't even realize how good it was going to be, but it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, his identity as a father was so much more important to him
yeah.
than his profession.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I think there is so much in that where you will, as an orphan, you will cling to what has made you feel somewhat of a son or daughter.
Yeah.
Has given you value.
Right.
And that's like, that's where like, people don't understand, like that's where prayer comes in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, and I believe there are, like one of the things I love that Apostle always says is he says like, I always want everyone in my house to be wealthy because that's how we fund the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a great way to fund the kingdom is having people that understand that their values are sons and daughters, and they get so successful, they just
yeah
throw it all at what the Father's doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that goes with anything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I hate to brag on him because it's like, you know, vinegar on my tongue. But if you were to take Braden as an example, Braden has never and never will care to ever be on a stage again.
Yeah.
If you told Braden to do sound, he would do the sound. If you told, yeah. you know what I mean, Braden to...
He's literally trying to get off the stage.
He's always trying to never be in any kind yeah. of public eye, and he's the yeah. probably one of the best worship leaders on the planet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And but at the end of the day, like, he has a radical understanding of who he is, and he doesn't need it.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't need that to mm-hmm. be successful.
Yeah.
I don't need that to feel something.
Yeah.
I'm a son. I'm a father. I have a kingdom family. I have brothers.
Yeah.
Have, you know what I mean? Like, yep. you know, we're all brothers here. You know what I mean? Especially yeah. all of us. And so, like, you know, when you have that, like, none of that stuff begins to matter to you. But that's found in prayer.
Yeah.
That is prayer. That's what prayer does to you. Prayer yep. has less to do about your ability to hopefully not sin.
Right.
And him telling you what you're doing right versus wrong.
Yeah.
But who you are, how to create, how to build yourself, and who you're called to be.
Yep.
And watch the resources come and watch you not care.
Right. Yep. Yeah. When you let him instill your identity and your value, those other things don't matter. You don't need a stage. You don't need to be the guy who does this. You don't need to be the guy who does that.
No.
Because you realize that you're so, so fully loved as a son that that's it.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
And then what's so funny is that it's from that place that success in other areas come.
Yeah.
And they'll come better than they would have
yeah.
if you remained an orphan.
And I felt that now more than ever because, you know, there's a place in me. I love preaching. I love teaching.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things in the world to do. And you can get caught in finding overvalue in that.
Yeah.
And I feel like Yahweh's baptizing me so much in who I am that, like, if I was a guy that put up chairs at B-Love, but was a father to Benjamin, could hunt and fish with my son, be with my wife.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, great. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care at all. You know, even if we live in the same house we do, doing the same things we do for the rest of our lives, there's a fulfillment in who I am in him and who he's made me.
Yeah.
And he's made me a husband. He's made me a father.
Mm-hmm.
He's made me a son.
Yeah.
You know, he's made me a spiritual son. He's made me a spiritual father.
Yeah.
And I don't care about anything else outside of those things because that's who he's designed me for.
Right. And that's the irony, is that he exalts the humble.
It's true.
So the more we let him speak to us in such a way that we become like humble people, he'll say, oh, I can trust you with this now.
Well, and the funny thing is oftentimes our humility is found in his bragging on us.
Yeah.
I actually find I'm more humble. Well, it feels unhumble to say you're humble, but I feel like I'm becoming more humble as a person because I feel I listen to how much he talks about how great I am and how much he loves me.
Yeah.
So no other worth is needed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not clinging to insecurity of other people to find my self-worth because he's made me worthy enough as Noah. And it's like, if you want to feel praised for who you are, go sit in prayer.
Yeah. I'll end with this. This is something, I heard somebody say this. It might've been Will Fix. So Will, if you listen to this, if this was you, great job. If this wasn't you,
speaking of humble,
you can all assume that this was my original thought just now.
Brian and Will, two of the humblest people I know.
You know, throughout the Gospels, the disciples were often arguing about who was the greatest.
Yeah.
You know? And you can look at that two different ways. You can look at that and think those guys were arrogant and petty. And, you know, really didn't understand who they were or, you know, or what. Or you could look at it that way, or you could look at it and wonder if Jesus spoke to each of them individually in a way that is so honoring, so encouraging, so uplifting, all of those things, that if he spoke to all of them in such a way that they all actually believed that they were the greatest.
That is so good.
And I think, you know, false humility is taking a lesser perspective of yourself than the Father has.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's true.
True humility is I understand who I am. I understand that I'm loved, that there are amazing things about me. But that doesn't come at the expense of how I think about you.
Yeah.
Because that's where we go into error too.
Right.
If I think I'm this, you know, lowly worm of a creature.
Yeah. Like Western Christianity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If that's the position I take, well, that's actually not humility.
Mm-hmm.
If I think I'm the greatest and I'm better than all of you and you're all the worst, that's not it either.
Right.
But when we have this collective corporate elevation of our awareness of our identities and how loved we are, how valuable we are, we begin to not only see ourselves that way, but we see each other that way.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's I love the way Apostle says it about John. He says, John calling himself the one that Jesus loved is either the most prideful statement in Scripture or the greatest revelation of who he was that there is.
Yeah.
And when John says in the book of John, the disciple that Jesus loved, we would take it this way, but I don't think John ever meant because he didn't love the rest of them.
Right.
He just loved me.
Yeah. Yep.
He did love the rest of them, but guess who I'm talking about? Me.
Right.
And he loved me.
Yep.
And he was never devaluing anyone else to say that he was loved.
Right.
But he also was humble enough to say, no, he loved me.
Yeah. He wasn't like, oh, I'm just happy to be part of the group.
Yeah. I'm just happy to be in the room, Jesus. You know? No. He's like, I'm the beloved of the Father.
Yep.
I'm the dude.
That's so good. We got to land this thing.
Sucks.
Let's bring it home.
Yep.
I know. We could talk all day.
I know.
I think if you're in our community group, an activation for you this week is to pray.
Yeah. Good. That's a great one.
That's a great one, right? But, you know, whether it's And I would say hone in this week on whether it's intercession, whether it's supplication and, you know, making your requests known. One we didn't talk about is just gratitude.
Yeah.
I think gratitude is an incredibly powerful tool of prayer. Yeah,
worship, the daily worship, office.
Contemplative prayer.
Contemplative prayer.
But just think about those different avenues of prayer that we talked about and hone in on at least one of those this week and spend some time just practicing that this week. And then community group leaders, just get ready to discuss that and just start exploring the nature and the wonder of prayer.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts?
No, I mean, the only thing I would say is within that, create real spiritual rhythms.
Sure.
Create a rhythm in which you do that.
Sure.
And as much as some people, I understand your schedule's sporadic,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't always have to be.
Sure.
And so find a rhythm that actually works for you and meet him at the same time.
That's good.
Create a rhythm with it. Because if you don't, I often find you won't maintain it.
Sure.
You know, just create a rhythm where you do it at the same time every day. It's the same rhythm for you. Doesn't mean it won't change.
Yeah.
But often withdraw and find those times of withdrawal.
Yep. That's good. All right. Well, it's been fun. Thank you to all our listeners, and we love you, and we'll see you next week.